This is Science Friday. I'm Flora Lichtman, filling in for Ira Flatow today. Remember the Jetson family from Orbit City, right? Always flying off to school or the mall in their own pod. Well, this week, Elon Musk, another kind of spaceman, is trying to bring that pod travel down to Earth. He unveiled designs for a high-speed transit system called Hyperloop. He says it would whisk you from San Francisco to Los Angeles in 30 minutes. That means traveling at 700 miles per hour. So how does Hyperloop work, and will it work? Our next guest is here to tell us just that. Tim Deschant is a senior digital editor at Nova, and he joins us from WGBH. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so give us the real... This has been all the buzz this week. Give us the real deal. Could this work physically?
Physically, it does seem to be possible. There might be some changes that need to be made, but by and large, people think that, theoretically, that this actually could work.
Break it down. How would it work?
Well, he envisions two tubes running down Interstate 5 in California, and those tubes would be sucked clear of most of their air. They'd be lowered to 1/1000th of an atmosphere of pressure, and that would reduce wind resistance in the tunnel for the capsules that would travel through. And these capsules would be made of, in theory, probably some lightweight material. And along the bottom, they'd have some skis that would kind of work like the air hockey table part that he mentioned. So there would be a turbine compressor in the very front of these capsules that would feed the remaining oxygen in the tubes down through little holes in these skis. And that would create about 0.5 millimeter to 1.3 millimeters of lift. And that would keep the capsules gliding down these tubes at, as you said, over 700 miles an hour.
And so the pressure differential is actually the thing that's propelling them?
No, that's what some people were speculating early on. But in fact, what's driving them is a linear motor. So linear electric motors work similar to standard electric motors, except they're kind of cut open and laid flat. So what they would be doing is he'd assemble, I think, 2.5 miles of linear motors to get the cars up to speed. And then because of the low wind resistance in these tunnels, he'd only need a booster linear motor about every 70 miles or so.
I got you. So the pressure, getting rid of the air, gets rid of drag.
Exactly.
But you still have to push some air out of the way, right? What about heat from that process?
That's true, yes. Yeah. So one of the concerns is that these air cushions that they're running on are such high pressure and that there'd be so much friction there that you'd be generating a lot of heat. Now, Musk's solution is to use an advanced aerospace alloy called Inconel that they use on their SpaceX rockets. And he thinks this will deal with some of that heat. But it remains to be seen whether the heat transfer from these skis to the rest of the structure could be dealt with in such a way that would keep the cabin comfortable for passengers.
Yeah, speaking of that, I mean, 700 miles per hour seems pretty fast. Is he talking about having barf bags in the pods, too?
No word on that yet, but I'm sure you'd need them. The force would be up to 0.5 G, depending on the turn and the acceleration. So that's quite a bit.
I mean, could people... I can't even envision what that's like. Are people's cheeks going to be flapping back? What?
I don't think it would be quite that much. I think I saw somewhere that 0.5 G is about going 0 to 60 between 6 and 7 seconds. So that's a reasonably fast car, but it's certainly not among the fastest cars today.
This is an old idea, actually. Is that right?
It is, yeah. The Hyperloop, from what I see of it, is kind of a hybrid of three different approaches to high-speed transit. The first obvious one is high-speed rail, which he's kind of pitting Hyperloop against. The other one is what's called a vac train. So again, this idea of an evacuated tube where you have low air pressure, and that would facilitate cars zipping through. And then kind of a hybrid of two other ones. One's called maglev, or the magnetic levitation trains. And those are propelled by the linear motors that he's proposing and using in Hyperloop. And then also this air cushion idea where he's supporting the capsules on skis. That was actually first proposed by a French engineer back in the 1960s. And the U.S. Department of Transportation experimented with these trains that were levitated on cushions of air and run down monorail-type guide rails. in the West, again, back in the 1960s and 70s.
But this would go, I mean, almost double the speed, right, of anything, any of these.
It would, yes. So right now, the current speed record for any kind of train is the Japanese maglev, and they've run that up to 311 miles an hour.
And this is around 700.
Yeah, he's actually saying that it could go up to 760 miles an hour, which one of the sources I spoke with was a little concerned about, because depending on the temperature of the air inside the tube, even though it's at very low pressure, the speed of sound is constant at different pressures. So depending on the temperature in that tube, 760 miles an hour may in fact exceed that, and then you might be pushing kind of sonic waves in front, or create a miniature sonic boom within the tunnel, which could probably wreak all sorts of havoc.
Wow. What was this about passengers carrying water in the pods?
So, yeah, I'm not sure if passengers would be carrying water, but I know that capsules would be. And he has an elaborate setup where he'd be using water to cool the skis and some of the other parts, and then he would be storing the steam on the train or on the capsule, and then they'd have to swap that out when they got to the next station. So there's certainly some complicated logistics involved in keeping this running.
Yeah, that's a lot of water, right, that would be required
it is.
For
yeah,
swapping.
I don't remember off the top of my head how much there is, but it certainly would be a large amount that you would have to carry along, which, of course, would affect the efficiency of the system.
Elon Musk, I think, described this as a sort of cost-effective solution. What are people saying about that?
Pretty much universally, people are saying that his estimates are very optimistic. He's saying about $6 billion he could get this thing built. But one of the biggest things that people have pointed out is he only allocated $1 billion to acquiring land or leasing land for additional right-of-way for the tracks. So even though I-5 is a very straight freeway, there are going to be points where it's going to turn, or it enters a city and the turns are too sharp even at the lower 300-mile-an-hour speeds he's proposing running there. So you'd need to have much more gradual turns. And to do that, you're going to have to buy land from somebody. And given how expensive it was for the California High-Speed Rail to purchase bits of land for their first section, I can't imagine he's going to be able to get away with it for $1 billion.
Let's go to the phones. Daniel in Ellensburg, Washington. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, thank you. I see one major drawback to the situation is things can go wrong because nothing's perfect. So you have a tube that basically has a vacuum in it, and if something goes wrong, breaks down, or even an earthquake, you're going to have to drain the whole system and, get the people out. Even if you have stations, so far apart, you're still going to have, something's going to happen between.
Good point. What about that, Tim? How would you deal with maintenance?
That's correct. It's one of the things that he kind of glossed over a little bit. I think he said that, oh, don't worry, the trains really can't get stuck, and if there is a loss of pressure within the cabin, that they'll have oxygen masks, and they'd figure out some way to rescue them. But it's not really clear how a capsule that's stuck, say, would get rescued, or if there was a rupture. One of the bigger concerns from someone I spoke with was that if there is, in fact, a rupture on the line, you're going to be moving from 1/1000th of an atmosphere of pressure to 1 atmosphere of pressure. And that's a really, really big difference. And so something going 700 miles an hour traveling into that would essentially be like hitting a brick wall.
Oh, wow. I also read that the design only leaves a tiny, tiny amount of space between the skis and the tube wall. Is that
yes.
right? Is that a problem?
Again, one of my sources, Dean Peterson, who's worked on superconducting magnets and maglev trains at Los Alamos National Laboratory, when I spoke with him about this, that was one of the things he raised, is that the 0.5 millimeter to 1.3 millimeters of lift that these air cushions would provide is a really tight tolerance. So you'd have to make sure that your welds are incredibly precise and that your tubes are manufactured to a very exacting standard.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if we want to compare this to, say, what maglev trains run at, generally they run between 1 centimeter and 10 centimeters of clearance from their track, which is still sounds tight, but it's obviously orders of magnitude more margin for error there.
Has this conversation prompted anyone to step in? And do you get the sense that this is going to happen or could happen?
I get the sense that this very well could happen. A lot of people are very excited about this. And whether anyone actually steps up and does it, that's another matter. This is going to be very expensive to build, even on kind of a large-scale prototype sort of situation. And so I think Elon Musk may find himself fulfilling his second partial promise and saying that, you know, maybe in 5 years he'll step in and build a full-scale working prototype to show that it can be done.
You know what's amazed me about this news is just how interested the public seems to be in it. It's really captured people's imaginations. I mean, it sounds really cool, but I think people also have gotten on board. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I think it sparked a really interesting conversation. You know, a lot of times when you bring up high-speed rail in this country, it kind of evokes a divisive mood in people. Some people are very much for it, others very much against it. And this is something that's kind of futuristic-y, and of course, Musk, being a salesman, knew that attaching a low price tag to it would help it get some traction in the media, I'm sure. And I think that people are really intrigued by the idea. Again, it's kind of that Jetsons sort of feel that you had in the introduction, and I think that's right. It's the concept of sitting down in a tube and then getting essentially shot down that tube and being hundreds of miles away in a half an hour. It's got very much the feel of the future about it.
Yeah, it does. And he said it would be only for $20, right?
He did, although if you look closely at his at the proposal that he put forth, the $20, I believe, only recoups the initial capital cost, so the $6 billion that he put out there. So, of course, if it goes over cost, you know, that projection's out the window. And the $6 billion is amortized over 20 years, so he's allowing himself 2 decades to get paid back for that $6 billion outlay. But what it doesn't include are things like maintenance or operational costs.
Well, that's where we have to leave it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Tim DeShawn is Senior Digital Editor at Nova. Up next, Girls in Science. Stay with us. We want to hear from you. 1-800-989-8255. We'll be back after this break. This is Science Friday from NPR.